Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a much happier post-game edition of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, with Sports Talk 790, and the Rockets on Friday night got their first win of the 2016-2017 NBA season, winning 106-98 in Dallas. Truly wasn't even that close. Rockets were up double digits with 2 or 3 minutes left in the fourth. Mavs had a pretty positive last minute, including a four-point play from Seth Curry. But it was a very encouraging performance from the Rockets after being up only two at the half and a subpar start from James Harden. Boy, did James really rebound in the second half. Ended up having 26 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, almost getting a triple-double, shooting 50% from the field, 45% from three. Just a tremendous game, and it shows you that even though Harden was absent from the first quarter and much of the first half, this is how good of a player that he is, that he can basically play only three quarters, if you want to look at it, really just a half of a game, and he can still have that kind of a stat line. It shows you just how elite he is. And basically, with Dirk Nowitzki sitting out this game for the Mavs, James Harden was by far the best player on the floor, and even in Dallas, he was not going to lose this game. So if you're a Rockets fan, you have to look at that positively, that James Harden took over the game when it mattered, and he was able to will the Rockets, even on the road, to a win over an outmatched opponent. Now, beyond James Harden's exploits, biggest takeaway from this game relative to the loss to the Lakers, they hit threes. The loss to the Lakers, they were 24% from behind the arc. Tonight, they were 47%, I believe. 15 of 32. Trevor Ariza was the biggest difference after going 2 of 8 in game 1. He was a poor shooter for most of the preseason as well. Trevor had 27 points tonight, 5 of 7 from 3. This is absolutely what you want to see from him. And again, this is nothing shocking. You always expected a regression to the mean, but it's particularly good to see away from home. Because really, the Rockets, we know they're going to start this year 7 of 8 away from home. Now, 2 of those are out of the way, so it's just 5 of the next 6 that are away from Toyota Center. But really, you can get into some bad habits on the road, and a lot of teams, especially if they're young, will rely on playing at home, the good vibes from being in front of the home crowd, to pull themselves out of it. The fact that the Rockets were able to pull themselves out of it in front of a hostile environment, a Dallas crowd, it was their home opener, Rockets are their chief rival, I think that's very good to see. It proves maturity. Ariza, 5 of 7 from deep, Harden, 4 of 9, Eric Gordon, 3 of 6. Some of it certainly is just law of averages. Good three-point shooters eventually are going to hit their shots. But to see them have the composure to do it in a road environment, in a game that really Dallas, even though they were outmanned without Dirk Nowitzki missing because of his illness, certainly the crowd was into it in the second half. They thought they had a chance to steal it, and the Rockets were able to snap out of it and coast to a relatively easy win. As I said, the eight-point final was not indicative of just how convincing the win was, because with about 2 or 3 minutes to go, this was a very comfortable 12 to 14 point lead in which there was never really any doubt when the game was in crunch time. Now, beyond Harden and the 3-point shooting, I think this was clearly a much better matchup for Nene. Now, let's not get carried away, because certainly Clint Capella was plus 15 in the plus minus, and Nene was plus 3. And Nene's percentages were a little, his numbers were a little inflated by the hack of Nene, which was an absolutely bizarre strategy because over the course of his career, Nene is certainly not a bad free throw shooter. I think that was Rick Carlisle knowing that without Dirk, he was a little bit desperate and out of options. But Nene was able to play in the fourth quarter and hold his own. And that's a big step in the right direction. Because certainly Clint Capella played 25 minutes tonight, 26 minutes in game one. it's clear part of it, how young he is. They don't want to turn him loose for 30-plus minutes a game. Another thing, the Rockets do play really fast, so I don't think they want to have him play 30-plus minutes a night with any sort of regularity, because they want to build him up into that kind of conditioning. As I said on the post-game Lakers show, the center position is the most difficult to play in this new Mike D'Antoni system, because big guys of that size are not used to running up and down the floor this quickly. So even if Capella looks really good, and tonight it wasn't a great statistical game for him, 4 points, 9 rebounds in his 25 minutes, but plus 15, clearly the Rockets played better with him on the floor, it was still very beneficial to the Rockets to have Nene as an option. And even though Nene went 0 of 2 from the field, ended up with 8 points, 3 rebounds, and was able to play some key minutes. And what that shows to me, and it's something I suspected watching game one, the Lakers were an abnormally bad matchup for Nene, because they have so many long big men. Mozgov in the first half. Now, Mozgov did not play many big minutes after halftime, but then they went with Larry Nance. They're a team of pogo sticks, and that is tricky for Nene, especially when he's playing alongside Ryan Anderson in the fourth quarter, because neither Nene nor Ryan Anderson is capable of getting those long rebounds. Neither is... I'll say they're both vertically challenged. And against a team like the Lakers that has had a ton of recent high draft picks, has all sorts of athleticism, that's a problem. Most teams are not the Lakers. The Mavs are an example of a team that certainly is not that. Usually they'd be starting Andrew Bogut and Dirk Nowitzki. Now there was no Dirk tonight, so it was Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes as a small ball four. But that was a much more palatable matchup for Nene, and while he was certainly not exceptional, he didn't even make a field goal tonight and actually fumbled away a couple of passes underneath, he was able to hold his own, especially defensively, and I thought that was a big step forward relative to what we saw in that Lakers game on Wednesday evening. So again, Nene still certainly has some further improvements to do. You want him to make some shots at the very least, but I think it shows what we expected after him having a positive preseason, the bad debut with him. That's just a difficult matchup. Against most teams, he's going to be able to hold his own. At 34 years old, he's certainly not a freak athlete anymore, but he is not a bad athlete. Against most teams, he's capable of being a 19 to 20 minutes per game center off the bench and holding his own out there. Besides the center minutes, another thing that stood out to me, KJ McDaniels, boy. Game one, 5 of 5. Tonight, he was 4 of 7. Game one, he just didn't play enough. And we heard after the game, or the day after practice, Mike D'Antoni said he wanted to get KJ more minutes. Well, he did. Tonight, he played over 22 minutes. And he was 4 of 11, 9 points. Team plus 2 in his minutes. Also had a couple of steals, had a huge sequence in the fourth quarter where they kind of pulled away. He had a poke steal at one end, came to the other, and drilled a 3. That's tremendous to see, because until Pat Beverly gets back, with Eric Gordon as a starter, you're losing one of your primary bench players. Now, you can stagger minutes a little bit, and the Rockets did that tonight. It's great to see that when Harden rested early in the fourth quarter, they were still able to be effective and actually get some separation from Dallas, and Gordon's efficiency and staggering the minutes was a part of that. But another part was KJ McDaniel's play, because certainly Sam Decker, Corey Brewer, Tyler Ennis, none of those guys were particularly dynamic offensively. Essentially what happened, KJ made some plays, and he didn't do it the traditional way, because KJ is not a creator, so to speak. You're not going to give him the ball and just clear out, but he was able to make some great cuts without the ball and finish. He was able to hit the 3. Really, the thing that stands out to me about KJ, he is really good at finishing. It is not as easy as he makes it look to hit those contested 2-3 footers in traffic, but given his athleticism, given his defensive ability, if he can, if he can make difficult shots as well as he has thus far this season, he's going to be a huge contributor off the bench. Because really, his biggest liability, his on-ball defense is not all the way there yet. But that should come with time. He's clearly got the IQ. He's got the court feel. He's got the athleticism. The only thing holding him back defensively is really a lack of experience. You can see that he's not used to some of the moves that some of the NBA players put on him in the half court. But the more he goes out there, the better his on-ball defense is going to get with that sort of experience. So if he's able to hold his own offensively in terms of creating away from the ball, hitting the occasional three, it's hard not to be really enthusiastic about what KJ can bring you off this bench. And right now, the bench is still weak because Pat Beverly's not there. KJ was your leading scorer off the bench with 9. Nene had 8, and that was because he got fouled a lot, the hack on Nene, which got him 6 free throws late, I believe. Other than that, Corey Brewer had 5. Harrell had a dunk in garbage time. Decker made 1 basket. Otherwise, you still have a lot to go from your bench, but I think you know early this year, without Pat Beverly, with Gordon in the starting lineup, your bench is not going to be there. It's just about buying time until Beverly gets back, and KJ's development is a very welcome side to that front. Other thing, it was really great to see Eric Gordon have much more success in the early minutes of the second quarter and fourth quarter. He didn't in Wednesday's game 1 in LA, but as I speculated, it wasn't because Gordon necessarily played poorly. It was because the other guys around him simply could not hit a shot. Having Corey Brewer hit a 3, having KJ hit a 3, just 2 of those does so much to help Eric Gordon get more spacing, and so he was able to have a lot more success in those minutes without James Harden. Gordon was a plus 18 tonight. That led the team, and really, we take it for granted because we've seen it from the start of the preseason, but I would say right now, Eric Gordon is clearly your number 2 player on this team after James Harden, and that's amazing to see. I said from the get-go that even though Ryan Anderson was your $80 million player, I think because of his position rarity, because he has not had as many brutal injuries as Eric, he got the bigger contract, but I thought Eric Gordon, if healthy, was the better player. So far, he's been that. Now, you could argue that Clint Capella, on a per-minute basis, on an upside basis, might be better than Eric Gordon, but certainly it's pretty clear that they're trying to cap Clint in the 25, 26 minutes per game now. So in terms of a number 2 option that's going to play starters minutes, Eric at 33 to James is 36 tonight, I would say he is pretty clearly your second best player. And through the preseason, through this game 2, a big game on the road at Dallas, a division rival that you're likely going to be competing against for playoff seeding, this was a very promising sign. Eric has, assuming he stays healthy, that's the ultimate knock on wood, he has given you everything you could hope for to this point in the season. And that dagger 3, both Dave Hardesty at Clutch Fans, my buddy Rocket Intellect, the dagger 3 that he hit, that was a low pass from Harden. It wasn't even really that good, but he is just that elite of a shooter. That's something the Rockets have not had in recent years. If you get it to Gordon at any point, a low pass, a high pass, just him being out there, if he is open, no matter where you get it to him, he can make that shot. And that is giving Harden more space than he's had in a while. And that's what bought Harden a little bit more time, to where even if Harden started off slow, he was able to still get in rhythm and ultimately bring the game home. Now, this game was not without any negatives. Certainly the Mavs were able to hang somewhat close, and part of that was because Harrison Barnes, 13 of 23, 31 points. This was a great game for him. He started against Ryan Anderson because it was a small ball 4 with Dirk out. Harrison Barnes went to your 4, and certainly he was able to take advantage of Anderson, but really, he had success against everybody. Ariza, James Harden, no one guarded him especially well. Actually, thought Harden had the best success against him. I think if you look at the per-possession basis, Harrison had a decent bit of success against Ariza, too. What I take out of that, with him having success against everyone, I don't think it's any one player being poor defensively. I think Harrison just had a great game. And, you know, as much as we make fun of him, there's a reason he got $94 million. Is he overpaid? Yes, but he was a top 10 pick. A lot of guys said he had superstar talent. I don't think he's going to show it every night. Certainly he was a terrible player in the preseason, but he's going to have games from time to time where he's really good. Tonight was one of those nights. And really, I don't think the Rockets defended him terribly. I don't think it was lazy. If you look, he was 13 of 23. He only had 4 threes, made 2 of them. They made him take a lot of awkward mid-range shots. He just made them. Tip your cap. And that happens a lot at home. And you know, you don't ever want to give 31 points to him on a regular basis, but I would not take any huge negatives from that other than Ryan Anderson being a tough matchup defensively. I thought Ariza and Harden did as well as you could reasonably expect. Now, when the teams make the return trip on Sunday, that's the unique thing about this matchup. Rockets and Mavs, they play again in Game 3 Sunday night in Houston. I would assume Dirk is back because this was not a real injury. Dirk was basically just ill, and I would assume with 48 more hours, he's going to be ready to go when they get to Houston. He is going to be your four alongside Andrew Bogut at the five, and that's going to shift Harrison Barnes to the three. So in some ways, it's going to give the Mavs obviously more offense because Dirk's one of the better offensive players of all time. Tremendous shooter. Takes away some of the mismatches that Harrison Barnes gave to Ryan early in the game. But the encouraging thing, if you're a Rockets fan, to take out is that I don't think that the Rockets won this game because of sheer offense. If that were the case, you would worry about, well, when the Mavs get their firepower back, then they can match Houston. The Rockets played very good defensively. They were excellent out in space. They had a ton of success against both Deron Williams and J.J. Barea. Williams and Barea combined for 47 points against the Pacers on 50% shooting. They only had 24 against the Rockets on far below 50% shooting. So, yes, Dirk's going to give you another dimension, certainly from three. He's a range guy, can stretch the floor, et cetera, et cetera. But the Rockets defended this game with a much better intensity than they did on Wednesday in Los Angeles. So even if you get Dirk back, I would say that the Mavs feel like a good matchup for them. Because Ryan Anderson, he was probably your biggest defensive deficiency in this game, and part of it was because of the mismatch of a quicker Harrison Barnes. I think Ryan's probably a much better fit against Dirk than he is against Barnes. And so if the Rockets were good defensively tonight, you would like to think that they're going to be even better in Houston when even if there's, you know, a slight uptick in the Mavs offense based on having Dirk, that'd be counteracted by Harrison Barnes not shooting 13 of 23 and scoring 31 points. That game from Harrison Barnes screams, you know what, new star player at home, he gets it going, wants to show up for his home fans, not really sustainable. So I would say any uptick in offensive performance from adding Dirk, you lose by Barnes regressing to the mean. And again, the backcourt, Deron Williams, J.J. Barea, yes, they had a big game in Game 1, but certainly they should not be scoring 47 points on 50% shooting that often. So you would hope that in Houston, the Rockets can continue their success on a relative basis. Final thought before I close this out. Mike D'Antoni said after Game 1 that he thought the biggest decline in the performance in the second half, and the Rockets, we all know, they scored 71 points in the first half, looked tremendous, then scored only 43 in the second half. Mike D'Antoni said that they ran out of gas, that their legs just weren't there. And a lot of people called that an excuse. A lot of people thought he was trying to give them an out and didn't really deserve it. Well, you know what? This game was different. This game was a much slower pace. You have to give Rick Carlisle credit. Rick Carlisle might be the best X's and O's coach in the game. He clearly slowed the pace. The Rockets were not able to get up and down the way they usually do. But the Rockets, they were better in the second half than they were the first. They scored 52 points and ended up scoring 54 in the second. And the only reason they scored 54 is slowed down the last couple of minutes after the starters were taken out with over a minute still left in the game. So I think it shows you that the decline in Game 1 was, in fact, very much related to them getting tired. Because in a game when they did not have as much transition play, there was not as much up and down, you didn't see the fatigue issues. In fact, the Rockets seemed to get better as the game went along. James Harden was poor in the first quarter, excellent in the third and fourth, and he was able to close the game out. So I think it shows you that, yes, fatigue was a factor in Game 1. Now, does that show you that they are up to par, that they are ready to play the style that Mike D'Antoni wants? No, there's more room to go, but what it shows you is that when these guys get their fitness and conditioning under them, and these are NBA players, even if this style is much faster than what they're used to, it is going to happen. When they get up there, this has potential to be a really good team when they have their legs. I know a lot of people don't want to hear it, but there is a valid excuse for them not quite being there. Half the preseason was spent in China and then adjusting to the jet lag from getting back. Games either at 6:30 in the morning or who the hell knows what it felt like for them when they got back to Houston. So if Mike D'Antoni believes that the jet lag, the legs not being there, was a factor in Game 1, then Game 2 at a slower pace, seeing them succeed in the second half and buckle down both defensively and become more efficient offensively, it's an encouraging sign that as the games progress and they get more used to this system, that they're going to be able to play 48 minutes and not just the 24 to 36 that we saw in game one. That's my biggest takeaway from this. Now again, Sunday night, that's the rematch with Dallas for game three. Downside, they're probably going to have Dirk Nowitzki. Upside, it's in Houston. I would certainly still think that the Rockets are favored in this game, and you have a lot of positives to take out of it. Just be cautious, because Dirk is certainly a longtime Rockets killer, and I would never count a win against Dirk until I see it happen. I told Rocket Intellect on Twitter before the game, he said, well, I think the Rockets should just destroy Dallas if they're legit these next two games. I would never take any win against Dirk Nowitzki and Rick Carlisle. They know how to grit it out. They are so smart. They are so good at the X's and O's. They are so gritty. It's never going to come easy. But yes, the Rockets are the better team. They showed it tonight. And even if Dirk is back, the upside from playing the home opener at Toyota Center, I'm assuming you guys are going to be ready with it. The home opener at the end of a weekend, everybody should be ready to go once they get back to Toyota Center on Sunday evening. So not easy, but the Rockets should certainly be a favorite there as well. Anyway, I think that will about do it. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can always email me or the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com with any questions or sponsorship inquiries that you might have. Again, very happy final from Dallas. Rockets 106, Mavs 98. Same two teams again on Sunday night in Houston. I'll be talking with you again that night. For now, have a good weekend. Talk to you on Sunday.